show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 624. I'm Jim McDowell. With me is Derek Cabrera. How's it going, Derek?
It's going very well, Jim. It's November. I can see the end of the race season, unfortunately. We've already seen the end of a couple of championships already. So MotoGP is winding up, but we get to discuss some great racing from the Australian and the Malaysian Grand Prix.
Yep, there was some pretty good racing there. But I think before we get into some news and all that good racing action, we need to thank a couple of people for their donations this week. So I want a big shout out to Alan Fleming and Scott Saunter for their continued support of the show. If you want to support the show, you can go to www.motopodcast.com. There is a link to PayPal and Patreon there. So let's move on to the news. Derek, you want to lead us off?
All right, so to start off the news, unfortunately, we have some sad news. On the Saturday of the Malaysian Grand Prix, in the first Asia Talent Cup race, Afriza Mumindar died in an accident during the race. It's terrible any time that happens during race weekend. I mean, any time, especially for a young kid like that who, again, as you know, it's the Asian Talent Cup, is the best kids around, and it was difficult for the paddock. You know, it's difficult for us as fans, even as far removed as we were. So our condolences to his family from the whole MotoPod team. Moving on to other news in the MotoGP paddock, the Jorge Lorenzo Honda rumors continue to filter down through the paddock. He keeps denying it. Honda is tight-lipped about it, so it seems like we won't know really until after the Valencia or maybe even the Jerez test 100% what's going on, because it seems like any rumors that there are indicate that those are going to be like that's when decisions are being made. So we'll talk a little bit more about Lorenzo and his possible replacement, Johan Zarco's debut on the LCR Honda later in the show. So that's that. Not a ton to talk about, but I just thought it was worthy of, I mean, I feel like this is like our news slash gossip headline recently. It's just been so much chatter about the silly season and everything. It's tough to kind of dissect that, and it's hard to say, you know, it's not news. There's no hard facts coming out, but you know, where there's smoke, there's fire in this paddock. So
this one is interesting for me. It's never gonna die, but Matt Oxley had a great article. We talked to Lorenzo. Lorenzo says, hey, I can't push because my back hurts, and you know, and basically he's scared of being in a wheelchair, and I can't blame him. But you got to think, what does Lorenzo really have?
It can't continue for either sides.
No, yeah. No, it's like the Zarco KTM thing. It's not good because these guys who are the mechanics and the crew and everybody, they don't want to travel the world and not see that motorcycle go as fast as it can be and be at the front. Lorenzo, I totally sympathize with what he's thinking and feeling. And honestly, that crash was as close to what happened to Wayne Rainey in 93 as I've seen since Wayne had his accident. And I don't want to see anybody confined to a wheelchair because of that kind of an accident. And there's nothing that can be done, but you got to think that as much as what Honda says they value his input and his data and they want to use it to try to make a motorcycle that has more feel on the front end, you got to think that Zarco looked mighty good.
Yeah. As we'll get into, but he was looking good on that bike. So we'll continue to take a look at that moving forward. Some hard facts and news that we'll give you is that the 2020 Husqvarna Moto 3 machine debuted this week at EICMA. Had some pretty significant revisions to the front fairing and the tail section, comparing it to this year's KTM machine, because effectively the Husqvarna is just a rebranded KTM. So that was interesting to see. Hopefully it can make a little bit more top power that it's lacking with the Honda this year. But it was just nice to see that machine. I really like the white livery. I think it looks really sharp. Definitely Google that if you haven't seen it already. But just some confirmation that Husqvarna will be taking over the Moto3 reins for KTM. And The last bit of news, not a ton of news this week, this past 2 weeks, I guess, is that Moto2 wildcards will return for 2020 for existing Moto2 teams. So basically, I guess wildcards were not allowed this season, basically due to Triumph engines were one and unknown. Would they be reliable? How, you know, would they have the production numbers they need? And additionally, there weren't production chassis to go around for wildcard entries, who generally use an older machine, either a year or two old. Or actually, from Phillip Island this week in the Moto3 race, they had a wildcard who was using a Calix KTM all the way from 2012, which blew my mind a bit. But yeah, so Moto2 teams will be able to do some wild cards. So maybe we'll see some up-and-comers from the Sev come in, do some wild cards, some teams that have teams in the Sev. It's a good jumping-off point for those guys and a good test for the teams to see if those kids are ready to come up. So yeah, that's about it on the news front. Jim? Let's go into Moto3 qualifying, shall we?
Sure. So the island threw up, I think, everything that it could possibly throw at us over the weekend. You had all kinds of rain, wind, and utter craziness that was going on there. But in the first qualifying session on Saturday for the Moto3 bikes, you had Darren Binder, Onchu, Arbolino, Agura, and Sasaki were all in that first session. Really didn't think that Sasaki would be in there or Agura. They've both been doing very well. But what happened in that first session was the wild card Shaw, he actually wound up dropping a massive amount of oil onto the track at turn six, and riders were just going down like pinball machine. It was wet. Everybody was on wets, and oil on top of water is never an easy thing to clean off, so that they had almost 40 minutes of downtime while they were trying to clean all that up, I think, or something close to it. It was a very long time. And basically, once they got that session going again, it was wet, but it was kind of drying. The wind was howling, but Onchu, Arbolino, Masia, and Booth Amos all got through. Big shout out to Booth Amos for getting out of that first session, but I mean, he basically just stuck it out, kept riding, kept going faster, and it was good enough for him to get there. Going into that second session for Moto3, everybody was now using slicks, but it started to rain again.
Yeah.
Which was...
Yeah, we should point out, it was miserable conditions on Saturday.
Oh, it's terrible.
Between rain and wind, I think the wind was the big factor, as we'll get onto with the MotoGP session, but even at this point, you know, you were looking at the TV screens and just feeling for these guys because the bikes weigh nothing, they weigh nothing. And trying to navigate, one, bad wet conditions, and two, having it be so windy, it looked pretty atrocious.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult. Through the first runs of QP2, Ramirez is out front, Kinnett was right there behind him, then Arenas and McPhee. Things were changing all the time. Between the wind blowing, the track drying, some then raining again, it was kind of crazy. But you know, Della Porta rode smart. He definitely did not do anything stupid, because the last thing he needed to do with a 47-point lead was throw it down and hurt himself in a qualifying session. So he did his bit, and we wound up with Ramirez on pole, then Canep, then Arenas, then McPhee, then Toba. Della Porta was sixth, and that's how where basically all your championship finishers are. The only one who's not there is Arbolino, who was down in 13th. He was just miserable time, again, with all the craziness that's going on from the weather and whatnot. But I think that covers up pretty much the qualifying end of Moto3. So we'll go to the race. So, again, you know, it's kind of amazing, but Arbolino winds up making up 12 places in the first lap. And as we've said over and over, qualifying in Moto3 doesn't really mean anything. It's all about the draft, especially with the craziness that is the island as well. So the really big talking point is the fact that we had 21 laps left in the race, and Canet goes down in turn one in what was a really fast crash. Basically, I think Canet got sucked into that turn a whole lot faster than what he thought he was going to get sucked in there. He just tried to give it that little bit more break, and that was the tire finally said, no, that's enough, and he folded the front end, went sliding off into the grass. That pretty much almost assured that Della Porta would win the world title, because all Della Porta had to do was come out of there with 51 points lead in the championship. So the only other person that he really had to cover was going to be Arbolino, because he's the only other guy that's kind of pretty much mathematically still alive for the championship. But it turned out to be a pretty doggone good race. Binder had charged to second with Toba McPhee. Suzuki was right there. There's the back and the fourth. It's great pack racing between everybody. With Arbolino, Suzuki, Arenas, Lopez, it's that pack. They're trading it back and forth. But then we wound up seeing Lopez use a Solash as a berm. He just basically goes right in there, man, and just bumps him out of the way and goes in there. Then Rodrigo, he was Frenati were in a very weird crash. I really don't know how that actually all happened, but safe to say that they were done for the day. So we get down to sort of like the five laps to go. It's Suzuki, it's Della Porta, it's Frenati, Arenas. Binder's still in there, and so is Masia. So at the very end, we got Minho and Toba there down with three laps to go. Toba looked like he was pretty hurt from that crash. He had a fair amount of damage that was done. He was actually okay, but I think he was maybe perhaps more shooken up than anything else overall of that. But then, Toba was under Tambuthamus, and they had an incident going in there. Then Masia went down. Then Vietti was also down. It was like we were losing everybody like flies. It just, everybody was pushing really hard, and the wind or whatever was starting to pick up, and the guys were just having a crazy old time. But at the end, Della Porta winds up winning the race. He beats his teammate Ramirez. So Leopard wins the world championship. Della Porta wins the world championship. Leopard wins the team championship. And they do it in a 1-2, which is super amazing for them. Ramirez was then followed by Arenas and Suzuki. And you had, like I said, Della Porta is the world champion. So that is how the race finished out. It was a good ride, I thought, by Darren Binder. He stayed on the bike, got a top 10, which is the first time that he's had that. Tambuthamus with a great ride. He was good from qualifying in through the race, and that was all looking good there as well. It was a great day. It was a great day for Leopard Honda, great day for Della Porta.
Yeah, I was impressed with Darren Binder that he stayed on. You're so used to seeing him fall off. He was Dyson. He's doing his Darren Binder thing, and I was like, man, he's going down. And he stayed on top six, and like you said, Tom Guthamos in eighth after a pretty terrible year. I think it's hard coming in as a rookie from anywhere, but a top 10 was solid for him. And I can't imagine a better way to win a world championship than to win it. To win on the day, right? Yeah. I feel like we don't. It's not a common occurrence,
No.
So to see that in what Della Porta, what was the stat that he was the first Italian champion on the lightweight class since Dovizioso?
Yeah, in 2004.
So it's been quite a run for for Della Porta this year. Can't take that away from him. Leopard Racing, they had three of the five last Moto 3 champions.
Yeah, they're so, every other year.
Yeah, so they're doing really good as well. Phillip Island, Moto 3. I mean, Moto GP is like a Moto 3 race, so Moto 3 is going to be crazy. So definitely recommend checking that one out. It was a good watch for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely worth the time. The sad part is that you just wish the weather was better. It's such a fantastic racetrack, and there's And we go there in late October when it's pretty atrocious, and that's not good. But, you know, it's still the island, and there's been times where it's been great, and this just happened to be one of those weekends where the weather wasn't really going with us. Anything else we want to talk about for Moto
3? No, I mean, it's a good ride, world championship race. Definitely go watch it. Watch all these races that we're talking about today, because they were all actually quite good in one way or the other. Great racing. Going on to Moto 2, mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about the qualifying sessions. Sure. Again, just to paint the picture of Saturday, it was a absolutely terrible Saturday. It just got worse as it got later in the day. So by Moto 2, rain's coming down, the wind's still picking up. It's not looking good. And
In the first Moto 2 QP1 session, you had Remy Gardner was there with Baldassari, Marini. They're all there along with Lowe's. Now, Lowe's was going to go to the back of the grid no matter what he did in qualifying because he had a very bad run-in with Raphine. And Lowe's put his hand up and said, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. My fault. Apologized. But still, he was going to the back of the grid. At this time, it was still dry and the guys were out on their slicks. And this was probably the track at its best, I would say, for Saturday. But Lowe's was quick. He was followed by Gardner, Vietti, and Marini. They were all there and were the fast four. And there was a brief shower that was at the end of that qualifying session. So when we got into QP2, we had all of the KTMs who've been fast all week. Like, that chassis hasn't worked at all, and suddenly you show up at the island and it just looks like it's magic, because I mean, even the old KTM chassis were looking fantastic. There was the normal putting around that goes on, as everybody knows that you got to have somebody to tow, or you want that rabbit or carrot out in front of you to be able to set a good lap time. But the problem was, why are you putting around? Because rain was coming. The sky had gotten black. It was going to be terrible again. And the rain kind of showed back up with 5 minutes left in the session to go in. But Navarro was out front. Then it was Brad Binder. Then Marini, who had come through from the first session. Then DiGiantonio, Martin, Lowe's, who would eventually go to the back of the grid. And then Alex Marquez was just not himself this weekend. He was having a terrible time. It looked like he couldn't make the bike do what he wanted to do, or he was just riding tight. But he qualified in 11th. He qualified in 7th position. Then you had Luthi wound up being in 11th. I think Luthi was kind of caught out by some of that rain. I think not too sure exactly what was going on there, because Luthi goes pretty good at Phillip Island. Gardner on his home track was 15th, which was pretty terrible qualifying for him. But that's sort of how things were going to go out. And then, you know, and then Augusto Fernandez, he was 17th. So his form, you know, at least Fernandez's form in this Moto 2 has totally fallen off here at the end of the year. And that was qualifying for Moto 2. Did I miss anything, Derek, that you would like to talk about?
No, I think the key point is that Marquez just really looking off in that pile the next day during the race as well. But just to start back there, you know, it's tough at Phillip Island with that turn one. Unless he got like the perfect start, it was going to be a tough day for him. So, mm-hmm. I thought that was huge. And I got to say, I was super impressed with Jesko Raffin.
Yes.
Eighth place on the NTS.
Yes.
But as is Phillip Island, the results are very unique. The KTMs were working here. The NTS was working. So it was very interesting. Moving on to the race, I thought it was, you know, it was really an interesting setup of a fantastic race up front. and kind of a Marquez watch as we had. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the race gets started, and basically Bender got a heck of a hole shot, got out front. He's followed by Navarro. His teammate Martin was right there, then Marini, and then you had Marquez and Bezzecchi. You got to turn four, and then Lecuona takes out a couple people. He took out Marini, he took out Bezzecchi, and Marquez was so lucky. He missed not being knocked down by millimeters, maybe. It was very, very close there at turn four. I think Lecuona just overestimated his the grip level that he was going to have on that front tire. And maybe it was cold, because that's a right-hand turn after a succession of lefts. So very possible that, you know, there wasn't a lot of heat in the tire, and it just didn't work for him when he went in there. But Bender and Martin, and then Gardner and Navarro and Luthi all had a bit of a gap. It was Bender and Martin on the KTMs. They had a gap going by a few laps in over Navarro and Luthi, and then they had a gap over Gardner. And then you had Marquez there with Gardner, and you could tell that Alex was riding pretty tight. He really had nothing going at all. It was really, like you said, the race is up front and it's a good race, but you can't help but want to keep looking back to see where Alex is, because, you know, he has a chance to be world champion in this. So you had Nagashima went to the front for a little bit, you know, or was trying to go forward, but Nakashima and Manzi then got past Marquez. I got that all messed up here. And Marquez is basically in trouble. It looked like he was just going to go backwards, and he was going to struggle to get into the top 10. But you had Bender, Martin out front, gone. Luthi had worked his way to third. Navarro had settled in at fourth. Gardner was fifth. And then sort of you're just, you know, kind of looking to see what else was going on. And then here, you know, basically as it runs down, you're getting to the end. And Chantra and Egetar, they go down together. It was an ambush move. It was an ambitious move by Chantra at turn four. I think he really didn't really let himself get carried away there a little bit. But basically, as you got to the end, it looked like Martin was actually faster than Bender out front. He was maybe kind of slightly rolling off the gas on the main stretch, or he was at least sitting up a little bit early going into turn one. But Bender eventually wound up just kind of putting it on Martin and goes on to win the race. Martin finishes second. So you get a KTM IO 1-2, which really worked good. It was a good result for Bender for it, because it was Luthi who was in third. So all the championship title contenders, Bender, Luthi, they're on the podium where they're supposed to be, and you start looking for Alex Marquez, who kind of bashed his way around and got himself up to eighth. Now Lecuona, who is involved in that first turn crash, got back and got going again, and basically he rode his way up and actually passed Marquez to finish seventh, which was a great recovery ride by Lecuona to get to that point. But
yeah, and that was even after a long lap penalty.
Yeah, he was given the long lap penalty for his actions, and he still was able to ride up to the front, which, you know, that was probably maybe even more, that was the ride of the day, to be quite honest, was that Lecuona could go do that, because he's still on the old KTM chassis, as far as I know. He doesn't have the same chassis that both Bender and Martin have. So again,
yeah, it seems like, I think only Io got the updates, and all the other customer teams are just kind of left hanging.
Yeah.
If anyone got any parts, though, it was Lecuona.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It would have been. Yeah. He definitely, because, you know, like I said, Lecuona is going to go to KTM's, go ride a KTM and MotoGP for Tech 3. So, but that was the race, with Marquez finishing down in seventh, which didn't do his championship any good. So he wound up having lost points to both Bender and Luthi. So you're going, hey, is he going to pull pull his head out, get back going straight at the next two rounds, because there's only 50 points left to play, and the championship is definitely not, you know, has, is he slipping? Is he going to let this championship slip away? You know, are you going to look at one of the most amazing collapses of all time kind of a thing? You just, you really don't want it to happen to him, but you're also like, wow, Bender's been riding so good. Bender kind of deserves a chance at a title as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out from this point forward. But that's really how your Moto 2 race went. So, like I said, it wasn't the best racing that you've ever seen for Moto 2, but it was definitely pretty doggone good.
Yeah, so that was Moto 2. Going into Moto GP, we had some pretty dramatic Saturday events. We got to FP4, and Miguel Oliveira had a massive crash. And like I've been kind of stressing this whole time, is that, you know, the conditions were terrible. And by the time MotoGP got out, the wind was so strong that Oliveira couldn't even turn in. If you watch that replay, you see him try to take that right-hander, and he literally can't tip the bike in. So he stands up and has a terrible crash, so much so that he ended up having to get surgery this past week. He tried to ride in Malaysia, and he couldn't. He tried to do FP1. He got through half of FP1. It didn't work. So yeah, it was pretty horrific. And they just, the riders were like, no, we're not gonna do this. So the FP1, FP2, or I'm sorry, Q1, Q2 sessions got pushed to Saturday morning, which I thought was really sensible. A lot of times, I mean, even let's look at World Superbike the other week in Argentina, where the track was dangerous, and riders said, you know, we're not going to go out, and unfortunately that race got run. You know, here everyone was in agreement, the conditions were no good. Obviously it was qualifying, it wasn't a full race event, but even still, like, rider safety came first in race direction, and the riders collectively agreed on a schedule that, while it was tight, it made sure that conditions were ideal, and that going onto the bikes was safe. So I thought that was great to see, especially in contrast to what we did see in World Superbike the other week.
Yeah, yeah. The interesting thing, too, was Quartararo had a very bad off in FP4 as well. And I think that's what kind of tipped the balance, was those two big crashes where neither guy could turn the bike in because the wind was preventing them from turning in. And the smart move was made, and there was a lot of talk about it, but you're going to have, after qualifying on Sunday morning, you were going to have roughly 4 hours to work on or fix bikes, and then that was going to get you into the race in the time slot. So the right call was made. The wind was definitely atrocious. I did read in Matt Oxley's article from that weekend that there was a lot of talk that the winglets and stuff that are on the bikes now in MotoGP were maybe a potential cause of some of these crashes and people not being able to turn in, because the aerodynamic effect of all the wind blowing across that winglet would prevent you from doing what you wanted to do, which is turn into a corner. And so there's an idea that, hey, we're going to have like two sets of bodywork homologated. Like, hey, if the wind is so great at Phillip Island, maybe we have to run the race without winglets and have a set, you know, for everywhere else where we can run with winglets or something. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I just to go off on that for a second, I liked it when Ducati was like, all right, well, we can only have one setup, and then you could take away, you could add to it, but that one design was homologated. I thought that was interesting and a smart way to go. But yeah, we'll see where this aerodynamics game continues to take us. I feel like they continue to refine the rules and try to pan everything out. But yeah, I don't know. I think that'd be silly, you know, having just for one specific condition to have a homologated bodywork. It seems silly, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I do not want to see MotoGP go down the same rabbit hole that Formula One has gone down with aerodynamics. I just don't want to see that. The racing is so good. It's so tight. It's so close. I don't want it to be spoiled because somebody wants to spend oodles and oodles of money and time in a wind tunnel figuring out how to build a set of winglets that work when the bike is leaned over at 60 degrees. I just don't want to see that happening because I see that as in no way, shape, or form benefiting you or I if we buy a brand new motorcycle in any way. So I think it's bad money, and I think it's just going to become, you know, bad racing because eventually you're going to wind up not maybe to the extent of like a Formula One car, but you're going to have so much dirty or disturbed air behind a motorcycle that you're not going to be able to get close to them. Well, that's not going to be any fun either. So on the fence there, but we'll let the boffins figure that one out. So we got some qualifying to talk about. So the first MotoGP session at Phillip Island had Quartararo, Mir, Zarco, Espargaro. They're all in that first session, which you wouldn't think that they would be, but that's how things played out because of the crazy weather and everything that was there. So Oliveira was then declared unfit to race, and if you've seen that crash, you understand why he was declared unfit to race. So at the end of the first runs, it's Quartararo, Mir, it's Bagnaia, Zarco, Espargaro. Then it's Quartararo, Iannone, Mir, and Zarco at the very end. So we get both Aprilias into the second qualifying session for the second time this year. They did it at Aragon, which is a track that we know the Aprilia goes well on because there's not a lot of stop-go corners. And you have the same thing at Phillip Island. There aren't a lot of stop-go corners. So they're looking pretty good. So we get into the second qualifying session that morning. And so at the end of the first runs, we've got Vinales, Quartararo, Marquez, Petrucci, and Crutchlow. And Marquez was kind of held up by Morbidelli a little bit going around. But it was, you know, it's okay. Marquez really doesn't have anything to ride for because, well, he's got a title wrapped up. So I think he's just riding for pride. And there was still going to be a second run as well. So in that second run, it was Vinales, Quartararo, Marquez, Rossi, Petrucci, and Crutchlow. Vinales just kept going faster no matter what he did. He just kept on going faster and faster and faster. Marquez had folded a couple times at the first turn, and he was very lucky to recover that motorcycle. But that is the magic that Marquez has. He can do what no one else can seemingly do on a motorcycle. But as it ended up, Vinales was on pole. Quartararo was second. Both of them, both the Yamahas looking very, very good. Vinales looking really good because he had a lot of pace throughout the weekend. And then Marquez qualifying in third. Rossi looked good because the old man was showing everybody how it was done. He was fourth. Then you had Petrucci, Crutchlow, Espargaro, Iannone in eighth. Then Miller, Dovizioso, Morbidelli, and Rins. Dovizioso not having a very good weekend, at least from that standpoint going on. So definitely going to be a little different. And Rins not doing well either, which suddenly somehow the Suzuki has forgotten how to put any kind of energy or heat into the soft Michelin tires. So that's definitely causing them a significant part of the problem.
So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I mean, this on paper, this seems like a perfect Suzuki track, you know, like long, flowing, fast corners.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And with the little bit more punch that the Suzuki has than the Yamaha right now, I was expecting Rins to be a little bit faster in qualifying, obviously, and have a bit better of a race, but we'll talk about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So do we want to move on to the race?
Yes. Let's.
Okay. All right.
It was a drama-filled race.
Yes, it was. So at the start of the race, it's Vinales basically takes off. You've got the tire situation. So Vinales was going to go on soft softs. Quartararo was going on a medium to hard. Marquez is going on a hard soft. And so that was, you had a bit of a tire idea of who was going to do what. But Rossi wound up with the hole shot at the very beginning. Iannone had come out of that eighth spot that I think that he was in and was at the front. And basically, Marquez kind of went backwards a little bit from his third starting position. But then As you got through one, you go to two. Quartararo got on the gas a little too hard, a little too quick maybe. And then the tire wasn't really up to temperature because it looked like he kind of pushed the front, then the back caught it, then the back came on, and he was caught the bike and he was out. But what was happening in the background was Petrucci had a massive high side. So Quartararo has the almost high side and the almost crash. Petrucci goes through with the whole thing and has the full crash. But when Petrucci comes down from the, from, you know, he's finally cleared to come back down after air traffic control gave him clearance to land, he winds up knocking into the back of Quattraro's bike. So actually, in reality, Quattraro goes down because literally Petrucci flung himself onto the back of his motorcycle. It sounds funny as I'll get out to say it. It was a serious situation. Luckily, nobody was hurt and everybody was able to get up and walk away from that incident. But it was one of those things where you're just like, I can't believe Petrucci actually flicked himself onto the back of Quartararo's motorcycle. Didn't you think that was like amazing just for that moment in time?
Yeah, it was like perfect positioning for that to happen. Like everything was perfectly aligned, unfortunately. But yeah, you know, Petrucci, he really whacked himself up there. It was a shame to see because I thought Quartararo, I mean, from coming from Q1, having two big crashes during the weekend, being a bit injured, but, you know, he's a young kid, pumped full of adrenaline, you know, recovered fast. I would have loved to see him, be up there with Mark and Vinales, as we'll talk about a little bit more, because obviously the Yamaha had pace that day. So it was a shame to see that his excuse, not excuse, but his reasoning, which I thought was pretty true, is that, you know, he's a rookie and he makes these mistakes. It's still his rookie season, we forget. And he can make these small mistakes, which obviously have big consequences. It was a shame to see that, but we still had a pretty good race otherwise. Jack Miller was doing well. We had Vinales and Marquez as well.
What about Ian Oney? Really, Ian Oney was at the front for a while. He led a lap with that Aprilia. I mean,
he did. He made it over the line, which I thought was impressive. I didn't think he would actually make it over the line first, but he did. Mm-hmm. The Aprilia was working well. That was a shock to see. Honestly, because they've really, you know, the weekend before they had to have the CEO of Aprilia Racing come out and say, the riders aren't going to talk because they shouldn't have to because we fucked up. And now both of them are in the top six and one of them's leading a race.
Yeah.
That was quite impressive.
Well, Ian Oney has always gone well at Phillip Island. Notwithstanding that. True. But, I mean, You wondered if it was going to last, and you kind of knew it wasn't going to last, but gosh darn it, those first five or six laps was just a Titanic Moto 3-esque Moto GP race because there was so many people going so many directions. I mean, look, Crutchlow made his way to the front, and Crutchlow came from, you know, a starting position that was pretty far back off the grid. Crutchlow was in sixth, so, I mean, he was at the front. He was there. I mean, it was all over the place. I mean, even Aleix was at the front with the other Aprilia. So, I mean, at one point it was Crutchlow, Marquez, so two Hondas, Ian Oney on an Aprilia, Vinales on a Yamaha, and then Aleix Espargaró on another Aprilia. Like, if you would have told me that was going to happen at Phillip Island, I'd have told you were crazy, but that's where it was. I mean, the only person who wasn't really going anywhere was Rossi. He had a great starting spot and went backwards after the hole shot. So, not sure what was going on with Rossi and all that, but eventually things kind of settled down a little bit, if you will, and Vinales kind of makes a really good move coming over the top of Lukey Heights. He gets by Marquez, and you get Vinales riding his race. He's on the Yamaha. We know that bike is really good on the edge of the tire, and Michelin brought that, is it a cured carcass, Derek, that they're using when they come to Phillip Island, it's a heat treated carcass something. But anyway, that really works well with the Yamaha. So flowing track, good handling motorcycle. Vinales is out front. You're thinking, yeah, he's got this. There's really no reason for him to not be getting this win, except for there's this guy named Mark Marquez who's basically stalking him the rest of the way. So you got down to it at the end, and about 3 or 4 laps from the end, you noticed that Marquez was kind of rolling off, and he was not going by Vinales on the front stretch. So this is probably maybe 10 to go. And even they made a mention of it with Simon Crayford. Said, yeah, you can hear Marquez is backing off early. So you kind of knew then.
When they did the helicopter, you saw Mark just sit up and roll out, like, well before the end of the straight. So you knew he had pace to go by him on the straight from, you know, 10 laps to go.
Right. Yeah. And he didn't. He never did. He sat there. Well, while those two decided to just follow each other around, there was some really good racing that was in the pack, because Dovizioso came up. He went from well back to getting up to basically, fourth. Rossi was there. Miller was there. Rins was there. And Bagnaia was there. That was some really good racing. The Dovi, Rossi, Miller, Rins, and Bagnaia group that they had, that 4, 5, 6, 7 group, were just mixing it up, going back and forth every which way, because you had, you know, the acceleration and top speed of the Ducati was somewhat neutered because you have so many fast corners coming onto it that gave the Yamaha enough advantage for Rossi to sort of stay there with them. And it was just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It was some really, really good racing that was going on. As we got down to the very, very end of it all, you had at one point, Bagnaia had moved his way up to fourth. And Marquez, like I said, you're waiting for this, and you kind of got the feeling that Marquez is stalking. You want the Jaws music playing in the background, because you're just thinking he's going to pull a Quartararo, pull a Thailand move and just stalk Vinales to the end, and he does. Going into the first turn, last lap, Marquez zooms by, takes the lead, and you think, okay, this is over. Well, they start to come towards Lukey Heights. The Yamaha and Vinales knows that that's his strong section of the track. He's got to make a run at this. He comes over the top of Lukey Heights. Marquez defends and moves to the middle of the track, which I think kind of threw Vinales off a little bit. He wasn't prepared for Marquez to maybe move over as much as he did or as soon as he did, but that enabled him to have to brake a little harder. He got the back end off the ground, and it came back down, and it didn't settle right, and boom, Vinales flicks off the high side, slides out. Marquez then putters on his way to victory at the very end there, but then Crutchlow would come home in second, and then in that big fight of the Ducatis, the Pramac team, Miller beats Bagnaia to the podium, which was great. And then you had Bagnaia then fourth, then Mir, and then Iannone and Dovizioso, who kind of fell off. Rossi fell off to eighth, but and then 10th was Espargaro on the other Aprilia. So the racing was phenomenal. It's a race that you almost got to watch again, because there's just so much kind of going on, and it really isn't all up front, but but you know what's going to happen. But still, really good racing.
Yeah, it was classic Marquez of 2019. You know, the stalk and then the go at the last lap. But like you said, because there was so much going on, because there was that crash on the last lap, because everyone was going for it with nothing to lose, I thought it was really a fantastic race.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I thought Mir had such a great ride, and Miller had a great ride to be on the podium in front of his home crowd, which that was just awesome unto itself for that part to be seen. Mir proved that the Suzuki did actually have pace, because he rode through the pack to get to fifth, which was, you know, a really good ride for him. Things seemed like like Mir seems to be getting better and better and better, and Renz is kind of stagnated or lost his way a little bit with the Suzuki. I mean, a track that Renz really should have done really well at, he struggled to get ninth. So there's something going on there that we don't quite know or we don't see that's becoming a bit of an issue. So, and then, you know, Zarco had a 13th. This is the first time he'd been on a Honda. First time on a Honda at Phillip Island, which is not the place to probably have a V4 and be running around your first time, plus all the wind and nope, and what was really bad conditions to where it was a dry race, but they really didn't have very much time in the dry to get any kind of setup on that motorcycle at all. For him to come home 13th, I thought was pretty respectable considering that, you know, Lorenzo was 16th in the race. So,
yeah, in couple that with not having like any true dry track time, you know, their sessions on Saturday were rough for Zarco, and you know, Friday is literally just, are the handlebars in the right place, you know? So
yeah,
it was a very impressive performance that he did, and I think that pretty much sums up the Australian rounds. We can now switch over to the Malaysian Grand Prix.
Yes, we can go to Malaysia. So, with Malaysia in Moto 3, coming out of the first qualifying session, well, what a difference it was to go from Australia, which I think you saw everybody with the woolly caps, the big coats, the wind was horrible, it was super cold, and I'm not sure how long of a flight it is from Melbourne to Singapore, or no, not to Singapore. I guess they wouldn't fly to Singapore. I guess they fly to Kuala Lumpur, not Singapore.
Yeah.
Kuala Lumpur. And they would get there. And now it's like, you know, 32 degrees outside and super muggy and hot. It just, the range of weather was just remarkable. But in qualifying for Moto 3 in the first session, the first four guys to get out were Arenas, Antonelli, Masaya, and Anshu, who has a lot of experience at this track from the Asia Talent. He rode Asia Talent Cup there, I believe. I know he had experience on that track. Arbolino did not make it out, which was interesting. So did Masaya. And then you had pretty much everybody else that would be where they are. The surprise to me was that Anshu got out with that KTM and got on to the second session. So in the second session, you had Ramirez taking the pole for Leopard Honda. Then you had Suzuki, McPhee, and Arenas showing that what he can do in the first session, he can do in the second session. Vietti, Darren Binder qualified sixth, which was really good. Della Porta, with really nothing to gain, winds up being seventh. But then the qualifying woes seem to have struck Canet because he was only 12th in that session. So that put him pretty far back on the grid, but big long straightaways, probably going to not be important where you qualify. You just got to stay in that lead pack, kind of stay in that draft, and things should be okay. Did I miss anything out of qualifying that we should discuss?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. Yeah, because it was a pretty basic qualifying session. It wasn't, you know, wasn't really anything crazy that happened. The crazy starts at the beginning of the Moto 3 race, because Masaya comes, is shown with his bike having stopped after coming out of turn 14, and there's some sort of trouble with it. Now, there was a lot of frantic running around on the grid, getting his team off of the grid. The corner workers, they got the bike off the track, they got it onto a trailer and a truck, and they were flying around to get it back to the pits. And it was one of those race against time kind of things to see if Masaya was going to be able to actually start the race. And they quickly had the bike into the pit lane. They were changing tires on it, which I thought was really interesting, and they had the gas tank off of the bike, and they had one of the KTM factory guys was there. He looked like he had plugged in some kind, I don't think he had his laptop plugged into it, but I think he plugged something into it. And I'm guessing this was a voltmeter or something that they were using, because it was found out later on that it was a battery problem where the battery had died in the motorcycle. So they changed that, they swapped it, they put the gas tank back on, and they were able to get Macia to be able to start the warm-up lap from pit lane, which meant that he could actually then start in the very last grid position for the race. So drama already taking on in this.
Yeah, what a bizarre issue. A dead battery on a race bike.
I don't know about that one. I mean, I'm pretty sure that it's there to run the fuel pump that's required to run the fuel injection system. I mean, you know, that's where the electricity is needed. And now I'm guessing that they're either running I don't think they're exactly putting 14 volts of electricity back into that battery from that bike as a race bike, because that would be a draw on that little four stroke that you wouldn't want to do. So I'm assuming it's a total loss battery electrical type system where, you know, you're not charging it back up during the race. It's just charged and it just bleeds off as it goes. And maybe somebody forgot to change the battery or forgot to charge the battery back up. Maybe one of those things. I mean, you know, how many times have you had your laptop at work somewhere and you run around and go, oh crap, I need a plug because it's about ready to go dead. So, you know, very possible that that's what could be happening, because I'm pretty sure the bike probably only generates enough electrical power to actually run itself, and that's it. And there's not enough left over, and then the battery is supplemental to keeping the fuel injection system going. Anyway, when the lights actually go green for this, you had Arenas and Ramirez out front, followed by Suzuki, Darren Binder, McPhee, and Vietti. We had Della Porta was definitely in the back, and the first few laps of this race are pretty amazing to watch because they are all going at it. It is pretty amazing stuff. It is crazy between Suzuki, Rodrigo, Ramirez, Arenas. They're going back and forth, and and Lopez has actually had made his way up to it. And then we get to the big crash that happens in the Moto 3 class. They're coming out of turn 4. Rodrigo is out front. He high sides coming out of 4. He crashes directly in front of Suzuki. Suzuki has absolutely nowhere to go and hits him. And then from the first angle, out of the blue, Lopez splits between the Suzuki, who is sliding across the track, and Rodrigo, who is sliding the other one in the track, splits between them and then just plows directly into Rodrigo's bike and just goes over the top in a vicious, vicious high side. It's a great thing to know that these guys have those airbags and the air suits, and you could see it blow up in slow motion, and when he hits the ground, it probably saved his collarbone, and as one of Gavin Emmett said, he probably saved his life, because the way he crashed his head into the pavement was, he could have easily snapped his neck with that.
Yeah, so it was
an incredibly nasty, very scary, scary crash. And then from the helicopter, you're able to actually see that, I think it was McPhee and Lopez actually bump each other as that wreck happens in front of them, because McPhee, I think, let off a little bit or tried to change his line, and that affected Lopez, who then had nowhere to go and just, I think, by the grace of God, was able to split the two downed riders and then, you know, actually hit his bike. But that one, I mean, that right there was super, super scary, because that was, you know, we already had the tragedy on the weekend. We didn't need another tragedy on top of that weekend. And, you know, it's been a while since Marco died at that track too. So I wanted no part of that whatsoever to be seen. But the big beneficiary out of all this craziness that has now happened in front was Della Porta, because Della Porta had now suddenly came to the front of the pack. And it was Della Porta who was there with Vietti and Arenas. And then guess who had come from pit lane to be in the top four or top five was Macia. I mean, what they had changed tires for was they put a soft tire on his motorcycle And he used that to great effect to race through the pack to be where he was, which was pretty amazing. I mean, there was an opportunity that Masia could win the race. At that point, he had pace, he had tire, he was riding like a man possessed. And I mean, sometimes a little bit of adrenaline and angst will make you just ride that much faster. But there became a point where it was a Vietti versus a Della Porta kind of a battle that sort of developed. And it was that Honda versus KTM thing that we've seen all year, where basically Della Porta could out-accelerate and had a better top end, a little more horsepower, and could pull away from Vietti. And Vietti could not do anything. Even though he was in the draft, Della Porta would still put one, maybe 1.5 bike lengths on him. So you knew that Della Porta was thinking, well, if I'm going to win this, all I have to do is actually be ahead out of turn 14, because there's no way they're going to get by me when I get to turn 15, and then I can out accelerate everybody as I go to the checkered flag. So that is exactly what wound up happening. That is that Della Porta used that strategy to win, but Garcia, who was also on a Honda, then used the draft off of Masia and Vietti to actually move himself up and get to second place. So a maiden podium for Garcia. Masia from the pit lane will finish third in this race, which was an amazing statistic as well there. Then you had Argura, who wound up in fourth. Vietti would then finish fifth after being bumped and basically taken advantage of and mugged, if you will, at the very end. Then you're followed by Ramirez, McPhee. Canet struggled on to eighth. Arbolino was ninth. And then Antonelli was 10th. Fanati, 11th. Rorenas, Slack, Raul Fernandez, and Ricardo Rossi round out your top 15. That was a pretty barnstorming Moto3 race from Malaysia, I will say.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, it almost bettered the Brad Binder from Joan Masia of Jerez back when Binder had to start from the back of the grid. But yeah, it was crazy. You had crashes, you had great racing, you had dicing. But Della Porta, again, showing why he's the champion of 2019.
Yeah. I mean, what a way to win. That was three race wins in a row by an Italian. And that's the first time that's happened since Marco Melandri in 99 on a 125, I think they said. So it was like 20 years. That's pretty crazy.
Yes, that's pretty nuts.
Yeah. Oh, there was also another wreck between Toba, Minho, and Sasaki. They were all down at turn four. Turn four had a lot of problems in it this weekend, especially for the Moto3 guys. There wasn't a lot of video evidence of what exactly happened at that time or at that crash, but you almost think it had to be sort of like a replay of the Rodrigo high side and whatnot, sort of that same kind of an issue that kind of ran through there. The interesting thing was that Ramirez, he was actually grass tracked that wreck to get around, and then he spent the race trying to catch back up, and in the melee he wound up sliding back to sixth, so we didn't have that in there. But I think that pretty much does it. But you know, Della Porta showed you why Della Porta is the world champion. I mean, he had really nothing to prove other than to say, hey, I am the champion, and he did it in fine style by winning his third race in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Moving on to Moto2, it was quite a weekend for the Moto2 class. Binder was back in it. Moody was in it.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. Marquez has a chance to wrap up the title. All he's going to do is leave the race 25 points ahead of Luthi or 26 points ahead of Binder. So that's where we were. He was 23 points ahead, I think, coming into, or he had a 28-point lead coming in, and he only needed to leave with 25 points to win the world title. So that was on the line as we went into it. So continue, Derek, as I interrupted you badly.
I was just going to start to go into Q1. We had Fernandez and Manzi go on to Q2. Got to say, the Envy Agusta in Manzi's hands has been looking much better of late. He hasn't been crashing quite as much. Still going down though. But yeah, it was I was surprised to see Baldessari. He didn't get out of Q1, and neither did Marco Bezzecchi, who has seemed to find some form of late, but he was really struggling as well.
Yeah, it was Chantra who went through, and Chantra was actually had a little time sitting at the top of the session, and then he actually went down. He was, you know, trying to restart the bike, as we know is the normal procedure with the Triumphs. You got to work at it to get it going again. He actually had made it back to the pits. They were trying to fix it. They weren't going to get it back out in time, so he had to sweat it out in the pits. No pun intended. I didn't mean that. I really didn't. But he actually did make it through to go on to the second session, which was pretty good for him. I mean, I've been impressed with Chantra. I mean, he's showed some really pretty good form on that Moto2 bike. So he went through. So did Fernandez, Manzi, and Rafin. So those guys all went through and were going into Q2. In Q2, you had about 6 minutes to go, and they got a little sprinkling of rain that came in. Now Marquez was looking really good. He was out front on pole. Then you had Vierge, his teammate, was right there with him. Martin was looking very well. Then Luthi, Nagashima, and Gardner. But the problem was Binder. Binder didn't want people following him, or he couldn't get it going. I didn't quite figure out why, but he was not at the front. But then the rain kind of let off a little bit. I don't think it was raining hard enough that the track was wet or that it was going to be a problem. I think it was more like one of those, ooh, I see rain on my visor, or I see rain on my windscreen, and we're in Malaysia, which is very tropical. Is this going to become a massive downpour? Because I don't know if it's raining on the other side of the track, and when I get there, it may be. So I need to be sort of aware of my situation. And Binder just kind of put his head back down and charged through the pack to actually go third in the session. Marquez looked like the old Alex Marquez. He was on pole. Then Nakashima, Binder, as I talked about, followed by Vierge, Luthi, Martin, Lowe's, Schroeder, Remy Gardner, filling out your first three rows. So that's qualifying from that, which I thought was a pretty good session. The KTMs were going fast again. Marquez looked like himself. He said he had a long conversation with his brother. Who better to get advice from than your brother, right? Who's a, you know, five-time MotoGP champion, 8 times champion overall. And
very true.
I mean, he said, look, just relax and ride and have fun. And don't worry about it. Just do what you do. Find your comfort and do it. And that's kind of looked like what was happening. Like, you sort of kind of, the last couple races, if you looked into Alex's eyes, you saw... not an unhappy Marquez, but he was definitely more attentive. You could see that he was not relaxed and didn't have a smile. And you know what? There's got to be a huge amount of pressure. You're talking about winning a world title, something you dreamed about as a kid, and you have to work inside of that. And so, you know, hey, get on his brother to kind of give him a little advice and help him out and get him back to look like he was in form. So the Moto2 race then starts with Binder taking off with a hole shot. Marquez follows him, then Nakashima, and then Vierge, and then they're followed along by Martin. Now, what was interesting was all the guys who were trying to become Rookie of the Year, they all wind up crashing at some point during this race. So not a good day to be a rookie Moto2 rider in Malaysia. But Binder and Marquez are basically out front. Binder was wide, and then Marquez got back in front of him again. And you could see just all the chatter that was still on the front end of that bike of the KTM. And you could see Binder just rides around it. And that's going to be really interesting to see him ride the MotoGP KTM, because that's going to be impressive. Because he really doesn't care about that front end. He just kind of uses the back to steer the bike. And the same way with Lekuona. If you look at Lekuona and how he rides, it's the same idea. They really don't care if the bike chatters in front. They just rely on the great braking stability they have. They toss it into the corner and make it work with the rear and throttle. So going to be interesting to see those two guys on the actual R, was it an RC16 KTM? But it was a four pipe.
Yeah, and
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, yeah, I think more than just how they ride that Moto2 bike is how they've adapted to ride that Moto2 bike, which is what's exciting to see them, to potentially see them and how they adapt to the MotoGP KTM. I think between the feeling that they have and the adaptability, that's where those two really shine in my eyes, and I think could really be interesting in MotoGP. But we're not there quite yet. We still got one race left. But
Luthi was, you know, if you're in championship countdown mode with Binder out front and Marquez second, that was enough to guarantee Marquez the world title. The world title was going to be won if we finished it that way. Luthi really had to make a charge, and he needed to get to the front because Luthi had to be in front of Marquez to keep this championship going until the last round at Valencia. But that was not to be. Basically, Marquez kind of had a bit of a gap on Luthi. Binder pulled out about a half of a second lead, and Binder was basically gone with about five to go. I think Marquez knew he was in a comfortable position. He knew he didn't have to beat Binder to be world champion. He just needed to stay where he was. I don't think he wanted to push it. I don't think he wanted to try to do anything stupid. I think he just wanted to get this championship over with. And basically, that is what happened. Binder went on to win. Marquez finished in second and takes the world championship. Luthi was third on the podium, followed by Vierge, Navarro, Lecuona in sixth, Baldassare seventh, Nakashima, Schroeder, Marini, Fernandez, Baliga with a decent ride, Pacini, and then Gardner not having any luck whatsoever, and Aguitar, your last point scorer. But props to Alex Marquez for being world champion this year, the second time that the Marquez brothers have both been world champions at the same time. Alex was a Moto3 champion in 2014 when Mark was MotoGP champion, and now Mark as a MotoGP champion, and Alex now as a Moto2 world champion. So this will be Marquez is back next year, so he will be defending his title crown in Moto2, and that will be the first person to do that since Zarco, right? When he won two MotoGP crowns, if I'm not mistaken.
But yeah, two Moto2 crowns. So we'll see if Marquez can repeat that. I think it's going to be really tough next year.
Yeah, I think so too.
With bikes going where they are and with riders having more experience,
Martin's the one I'm really interested in. Like, I'm not sure what chassis IO is going to get a speed
up. It sounds like they're going with Calix.
That's what I thought too, but man, I think it'll be really interesting to see what Martin does, or I'm super excited to see what Martin does. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, see if Fernandez can do consistent form, see if Baldassare can figure out what was going on with him. He's leaving the VR46 Academy, so, you know, see if Marini can get back on pace. So there's a lot of guys, and not to mention Tom Lüdi, who's generally been very consistent. So I think next year in Moto2 is going to be even more interesting because there's a little bit more of a foundation, and it's not just, you know, who's going to adapt the quickest, you know?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it wasn't a great Moto2 race, but the intrigue was definitely there as far as the championship, and we do have that now all settled. So every world championship has been decided. There's nothing left to play for, basically, at Valencia other than bragging rights. On to MotoGP, Derek?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and MotoGP, in the first qualifying session, Mir and Crutchlow are in Q1. Zarco is already into QP2 on the Honda. Pretty impressive, I thought, by Zarco to be there. And so, Aleix Espargaró, or Pol Espargaró, was also in this Q1 session. So Crutchlow was at the end. He on his last lap, he goes for it. He gets F1, and he pushes Mir down to third. And Petrucci and Cal will go on to the second session. So I think Petrucci was in there as well. I forgot to mention that. Then in Q2, we had basically Vinales, then Quartararo, Morbidelli, Crutchlow, Marquez, and Miller at the end of, say, the first run. We go into the pits and we come back out, and the mind games now begin between Quartararo and Marc Marquez. So Quartararo goes out, Marquez follows him. Quartararo doesn't like this. He rolls out of it. Anytime he rolls out of it, Marquez rolls out of it. You're just waiting for them to realize at some point that Quartararo knows he's going to have to go. He does. And when he does, Marquez goes with him. Now, Morbidelli kind of got between him, and that was kind of a smart play. I don't think Morbidelli was trying to do this on purpose, but I think Quartararo sensed that he had a buffer, so he put the hammer down early. Marquez had to get by Morbidelli and go into turn one. I think that may have caused Marquez to maybe not be concentrating as much as he needed to be on his throttle position, because he was dealing with getting by Morbidelli, because Marquez then high-sided himself to the moon in the turn two when he started to go back to the other way on to that left after that right. That was a big crash for the world champion, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was instant karma.
Yes.
He was doing something he shouldn't have been doing, and he got paid. He paid for it pretty quick.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What was bizarre was his interview, his debrief, when he was like, "Oh no, I wasn't trying to follow Quattro, I was trying to follow another Yamaha."
Yeah, what other Yamaha?
What? Yeah, like it was.
He hit
was
his
so
head
weird.
Too hard, man. Come on, he had to have had a concussion.
He face planted, man. Oh, I was surprised he didn't have like a black eye.
Well, I know he rung his bell hard. I mean, that goes to show you the. You know, a lot of sports. I'm a big hockey fan, and so you have when somebody takes a hit to the head in a hockey game. If it's they have spotters that are looking for that type of thing, and if they suspect you may have had a concussion, you have to go to the quiet room. You go through concussion protocol. I don't know if they have a concussion protocol per se in MotoGP. Do you know, Derek? I don't know. I know
they
that
don't,
he went to
they
a,
don't
get
like
a check.
Hockey does. They don't like BSB does. I think they have a very relaxed concussion protocol, which is concerning. I mean, think about Dovizioso. He was back on the bike after his crash in Silverstone and Misano, like less than 5 days later, mm-hmm. Where he didn't even know where he was. You had Petrucci. I think he had a crash a couple of years ago where he didn't know where he was and was just riding around.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at MotoGP and like while they have up their concussion not protocol, I mean maybe they call it a protocol, but it's nowhere near to the standard that it should be in professional sports that have head injuries, whether it be hockey or
pro football, American football,
yeah,
or whatever.
American
it doesn't
football
matter.
Or BSB. I think BSB is the standard. I think they have a benchmark, which I don't think is all that unreasonable.
No.
So yeah, it's quite concerning.
Especially when Marquez says I was following a Yamaha. Well, you know you're following. You know, you gotta think. Did you ring your bell that hard? Because if you did,
I don't
need to be on that bike.
No, I think that was just Mark being.
It could have been. I mean, I've been in that position where I've.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think. On a separate note, I think when I saw that, he, you know, hit it face first. And, it's concerning, even though if he feels okay, he feels physically okay. Even when I was in I went to New Jersey to watch Moto America, and Garrett Gerloff had a huge off, hit his head, and he didn't feel well enough, and the team were like, nope, you're going to the hospital. Like, don't get on the bike. You're going to the hospital right away. Which I think was, you know, really smart. But again, even, you know, I think I'll say it for the last time. I think BSB has the standard on this, which should be looked at as the gold standard in how to go about head injuries and motorsport. So moving on.
Instant karma.
There we have Mark start from his worst qualifying position since Mugello in 2015, I think they said it was.
Yeah, something crazy like that. He will start 11th from the grid, and Quartararo will take pole. Vinales will be second, and Morbidelli will be third. So the front row is all Yamahas. When was the last time there was a front row consisting of all Yamahas? I can't think. I don't know, but I thought it had to be like in the Zarco time frame when he was on Tech 3. I was thinking like Bonds or something is what comes to my mind, but I don't know exactly when.
Yeah, they said it was I think it was before Zarco.
It might have been.
They said it was like Le Mans. I don't know.
I should have had that in my notes. Let's just say it's been a while. It's been a while since three Yamahas were on the front row. So it was really good to see the Yamahas looking pretty good for the weekend. I mean, Quartararo, you know, rips his own visor off his helmet with his excitement of having gone fastest to take pole. The kid is a one-lap wonder. There is no question about that. He needs a little bit more seasoning, and he needs to become a little more consistent in what he's going to do, because as much as I hate to say this, I think Marquez is the gold standard of consistency, at least this year, because you know, it speaks for itself what his record is. I mean, you know, he's been first or second except for Coda, where he crashed. So,
where he was leading, right?
Exactly. So Quartararo was super happy to be on pole. Zarco would actually start ninth on the Honda. Again, I'm impressed by Zarco on the Honda. Now, granted, he's on the 2018 Honda, which has the better feel on the front, but again, back to this rumor, there's all this smoke and smoke going on about Lorenzo not riding. I mean, and you could put Zarco there, and you got a guy who's a Yamaha guy who rides the front end. You're going to get kind of the same data input that you would get if you had Lorenzo there. So I don't know, but we should talk about the race, I guess. So
yeah, I thought the race was it wasn't quite as good as Phillip Island. It's what Maverick was anticipated to do at Phillip Island is just kind of break away. I mean, he had the pace. If you looked at the race pace from FP3 and FP4 from Phillip Island, Vinales really should have taken that race, and he fulfilled that in Malaysia and really gave himself and Yamaha confidence, because as well as that bike was working on Sunday, if they had more horsepower, even if they had Suzuki horsepower, that bike would be so much more competitive.
Oh yeah.
So I think they're going to have to expect big things from their technical side, but obviously they've moved along from the struggles they were having a year ago and the struggles that they've been having this year. So it was really encouraging to see a really dominant performance by Vinales.
Yeah. I mean, Wilco Zeelenburg talked to Matt Oxley and says that, you know, the Yamaha has gotten better because it's been little changes. It's not one big thing. It's just little changes. It's small things. And the fact that Quartararo has shown that the bike is actually good has forced Vinales and Rossi to look at the data that is coming off of Quartararo's bike, and they've been able to use that to aid them to actually go faster, which there's some truth to that. But Vinales counters all that by saying, hey, look, I am better because I've been focusing on me and riding, and we found a good base setup after, when was that? After the test in Brno, and they've been using that as their baseline to go to, and he's been adapting himself to go faster. So that was all pretty good. One thing I wanted to mention, and this was in Phillip Island as well, was Marquez scrubbed in a set of wets at both Phillip Island and in Malaysia. Now, I know what everybody's saying. I had this whole thing about the fuel-saving conspiracy in Japan. I will tell you this. Marquez scrubbed in wets on a different bike in Australia and in Malaysia. The bike he scrubbed wets in Japan was the bike he took to the grid, and they changed the tires on the grid. So there's some truth to the fact that Marquez's bike works probably better on a set of scrubbed wets, but I still go with their saving fuel with a taller gear ratio for that siding lap. Anyway, that's an aside.
I think that was a really good point. But I mean, with that said, Mark ran out of fuel again at the end of the Malaysian race.
Yeah, a thirsty track, so, because you got two long straightaways that are pretty small and pretty tight, so a lot of acceleration. So yeah, it's a thirsty thing. I mean, you're trying to get there on 22 liters, which is, in all honesty, is not a lot of fuel for a high revving engine and with all the acceleration and blasts and whatnot. But at the start, is as you said, Vinales basically got the start, got to the front quickly, and was able to get away. He had the pace. He did get away. The impressive part is the fact that Marquez blows through the pack. He was from 11th to 2nd in one lap. That's a pretty impressive ride by the world champion. And if you want to know why Marc Marquez is a champion, it's because of rides like that. That is what he does, and that is why he is a world champion. He would hang on to second. He would just basically ride home. I think he was full of painkillers and adrenaline, but he did finish second. The best part of the race is really the battle that's going on for the final podium position, and that's going on between Dovizioso, Rossi, Rins, and Morbidelli, and surprisingly, Quartararo. Quartararo looked terrible. He was making mistakes. I thought, okay, why is this kid succumbing to the pressure that's being applied to him? And I thought about that for a little bit, and I realized, no, it's not a pressure issue, because when they talked to Quartararo after qualifying about Marquez wanting to follow him, and Quartararo kind of spun it and said, hey, he has to follow me because I'm the fastest guy, because he couldn't get a pole position if it wasn't for me. So he's definitely got a strong mind game, so I don't think it was a pressure thing, and it wasn't. We found out later on that it was a overheating front tire that was causing the problems for Quartararo, because the tire would overheat, that would build pressure. Too much pressure in the front tire causes it not to give him the grip that he needs, and it's a vicious cycle. We can't cool it down.
So, Mike, Jim, then you're saying it was the pressure thing?
Yeah, tire pressure thing, not a mental pressure thing.
Yeah, it was also much hotter on Sunday than it was
for
the rest of the weekend.
I wonder if they started with too high of an air pressure in the front, thinking that it maybe was going to become overcast or was going to become cloudy and cooled off a little bit, or maybe it was... Because I thought maybe it was a bum. I thought maybe it was like a bum rear tire, because I believe Michelin is still sort of hand making these tires. So there's not really a bum time. You don't really get a bum tire like you got a bum tire back in the what I would call like the late part of the 80s, the first part of the 90s. I mean, the technology, the quality control, the construction has gotten that much better, but. It could have. I thought maybe it might have spun on the rim and been off balance or something like that, or anything like that's possible, but it was just an overheating tire. So that racing that was happening for that final spot was pretty good. Rossi kept trying to get Dovizioso, but Dovizioso kept using the strong braking stability of the Ducati and the acceleration of the Ducati to keep Rossi at bay. Rossi, however, does get the accolade of being the fastest man around the track. He set a new lap record on the third lap. With a 159, which is pretty impressive for him and for Rossi. I mean, Rossi is not done. I mean, for being 40, that's pretty impressive, especially in that heat and the humidity that was there. Then we had Miller wound up losing a piece off of his bike. They showed that in the replay as he was trying to run. I think it's like Ducati runs that sort of that semicircular wheel cover on the bottom half of the wheel, and I think it must have kind of come loose or had gotten knocked off out of there. But the major talking point that I got out of the race, or the other very interesting point of the race, was Zarco crashed out. He literally was dive bombed by Mir and just knocked Zarco off big time. I do not know what Mir was thinking on that one, because Zarco is absolutely positively online at the apex, bent over, and wham, here comes Mir with the bike straight up and whoop, just nails him. What do you think was going on there with that one?
Yeah, it was hard to tell because they only had one angle to show the replay from. And it looked like there was a bit of a gap, so you can't fault Mir from the angle because it looks like he was going for it, but at the same time, it was obviously a risky move. So Mir had the excuse that, oh, I just got it because I was a rookie, and I honestly don't think that was like that harsh. Like, I think that's kind of fair, but there was only really one camera angle I saw from that, so it's hard to give up my fair opinion.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what happened either. I mean, there's something going on, but I'm not sure what. But yeah, from that one angle, it was definitely very damning against Mir. Like, hey, you really shouldn't have been here for that one, but you were. I don't know if we actually rounded up and talked about it, but Vinales wins, Marquez is second. Dovizioso will be on the podium. Rossi, Rins, Morbidelli, Quartararo, Miller, Petrucci, Mir after that accident, Espargaro, Pol, Benyaya, Espargaro, Aleix, and then Lorenzo actually scored a point, which I thought was nice. He was only 30 seconds behind the win this time, as opposed to being a minute behind at the previous race. So not to put any water on the suspected fire of Lorenzo not being at Honda next year, but that was his target, was to be 30 seconds behind, and he was, and they want to try to have that to be 15 seconds behind at Valencia. So progress is being made, but again, you got to wonder about the situation, and is it going to become one of those Zarco type moments with KTM? But that was the race. Is there anything else we need to add, Derek? I think we kind of covered it all. We've been babbling for quite some time.
Yeah, I think we've covered everything that there is to cover about these past two weekends. It's been a lot. It's been a lot of races in a few weeks. But yeah, we just have the last hurrah, and at Valencia, hopefully we see some good racing. We still get the Valencia tests this year for the final time because the schedules change moving forward. But it should be good. See a couple new faces on new bikes, and that's about it.
Yep. All right, well, we will be back after the Valencia race to discuss everything that happened and wrap it all up. Until then,